Black water diving. Sound intriguing? Well, do we have a guide for you? Jeff Millison loves marine science and photography. He's managed to combine his passions and now has a collection of stunning images put together as a field guide. Science meets art for this Kona diver who started biosciences and bioengineering at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. He also worked at the Waikiki Aquarium. His love for his work is infectious. His images of amazing sea creatures just pop against the night diving blackness.
When you see them in the wild, you know, what I tell people that I'm going out with is the gelatinous stuff, it really is, it looks like moving, living crystals that are just drifting through the open ocean. And so they're just beautiful to watch. They're like little prisms, you know?
So I'm kind of baffled. So how do you get these pictures? Because it's almost like you're getting x-rays of these things in the water.
Oh, sure. So what we do is we get on a boat and you travel about 5 miles offshore of the Big Island, which here, especially in Kona, 5 miles, you lose about 1,000 feet for every mile that you travel offshore, which means here in Kona, 5 miles will be about 5,000 feet of water. So we're just drifting over the top, right underneath the surface, effectively. And what we're doing, and the reason we do this at night, is we're looking for effectively a blending of a couple of different communities of animals that all come together offshore all over the world's oceans. We just have really easy access to it here. And the communities that I'm talking about, most people know what plankton are, right? So plankton are animals that can't drift against an appreciable current. But a lot of people haven't taken the time to really look at a plankton and say, well, what is that? And it can, some of these things can be fairly sizable. Siphonophores, most people call them a lot of what we're looking at jellies, but that's not entirely accurate. The other community that we really look at are animals that we can call vertical migrators. And these are heavier bodied animals, and they're more muscular, so they can't really turn themselves clear and just drift like the plankton. They have to swim a lot stronger. And they have to hide against visual predators. So what they do is during the day, they descend very, very, very deep. They use a cover of darkness to hide. And then every night, there's not a lot to eat down in the depths. So they have to come all the way up to the high productivity near the surface to feed. And so they do that at night. And that's called vertical migration. And it can be thousands of feet. And what we're doing, and what it kind of does, is it kind of squishes everything up near the surface where we are. So we just drift through this biological soup and look for anything interesting that really catches our eye. And after you do it enough times, you start to recognize some of your favorite characters over and over again. And they're it's just a blast.
Yeah, so these are the regulars at the bar.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm looking through your book, and, you know, there's one of a hairy goosefish that's really a trippy-looking thing.
Ooh.
But, you know, I mean, when you're down there with your camera in that darkness, I mean, how do you capture that image?
Oh, man. You know, the real key to that is throwing light. Just throw as much light at the thing as you can, because without light, you're looking at a black image, right? So I bring down with me 3 different lights, 2 of them for focusing the camera and 1 for holding in my hand and spotting animals. So my program is I go around and I use the spotter, or in the case of that goosefish, I let my wife play the spotter, and she's very good. So she found that goosefish, and she thought it was a jellyfish that they find in California. She was like, "That's very strange to see here." And then as she called me over, we both looked at it, and we saw that there was a little eyeball and little fins, and we said, Oh, that's something different. So anyway, I use the spotting light to find the animals, and then I'll use my focusing lights that are on my strobe arms to let my camera kind of hone in and focus on that animal. And then it's just a matter of pulling the trigger and getting the exposure right with the strobes and balancing the strobe power with the in-camera settings. But usually, I don't know how technical your audience is going to be here, but I'll usually start with something like an f-stop of 10, a shutter speed of 1/200th of a second, and an ISO of, let's say, 400, something like that. So that'll be like the strobes. So the focus lights let the camera kind of focus on it and figure out where this thing is, and the strobes are going to throw a really fast, very bright flash of light that's going to kind of freeze the animal in time, and also it's synced with the camera. So when the camera shutter drops, the strobes go off, and then this animal is exposed on the sensor at the back of the camera, and however it was sitting. And so part of that whole process is kind of watching this animal and waiting for it to do something that's going to be photogenic and do something that is that's going to be interesting to the viewer later. And you never know. A lot of these things are acting in ways that you can't really predict, and a lot of people don't understand exactly what they're doing, but you kind of just watch them and wait for them to do whatever they do, and hopefully you can figure out later after the fact.
Well, I'm just, you know, struck by the bioluminescence of some of the stuff. I mean, it looks like you're taking an X-ray of a really goofy-looking fish, you know, and so you see their bones. and their eyes, basically.
So, like, one of the concepts that's kind of hard to get across to people, because most people associate the ocean with coral reefs or tide pools or shallow water environments. Well, those occupy only about 8% of the total ocean. So trying to get them to wrap their heads around a world without any kind of a bottom is amazing. And one of the cool concepts is that deep water right offshore from Kona actually serves as a nursery for a lot of those shallow water habitats. So a lot of those fish that look like X-ray images, that's just how the fish looks when it's offshore. A couple of them are going to come back and be flounders or blennies or wrasses or things that animals that we land dwellers are much more familiar with. But when they're growing up, they're just little tasty morsels. So they're going to do anything they can to try and blend in against effectively a world of nothing. And so that's why they're going to be perfectly clear pretty close to it when we see them offshore.
But in a way, it's kind of cool because, you know, the black background, right?
It just makes them pop, right? Like, that's, mm-hmm. It's just so fortunate. A lot of these things, people travel days, really, on a plane to go down to the South Pacific or even around the islands and do something called a muck dive. And that's where you go down and you sift through the sand and you look for something interesting that crawls out and then you take a photo of it. And every time you do that, the background is always going to be this, it's a mucky, sandy, muddy environment. So it's never a really pretty background, but off on Blackwater, we get to just see this clean black background. It really helps the animals pop. It does.
And so that term Blackwater diving, how did that get coined?
Oh, man, that was honestly before my time. People started doing this dive, this type of diving. It kind of started with a guy named Chris Newbert, who back in early 1980 was on an assignment with National Geographic and would take his own boat offshore alone at night and just kind of grab a line, jump overboard, and then swim down to about 100 feet and wait for something to drift by, which even somebody like myself, who has done this dive hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, I look at that and I think, that guy's nuts. Because he was the first one to do it. He didn't know what he was going to encounter when he swam down to 100 feet. You know, just like Jacques Cousteau when he was first starting his the aqualung, or the first divers in the world, people kept telling them, you know, you're going to get eaten and swallowed up by a sea monster. And, you know, at the time, people, I'm sure, were telling Chris Newbert the same thing. Eventually, dive companies kind of realized, well, this is a really cool dive, but we can't really be throwing customers just asking them to hold on to a line and jump overboard. So they developed some safety protocols for the divers, and then they had to come up with some kind of a coin for it. So Blackwater, I mean, how much more accurate can you get than that, right?
It's just astounding. When I look at these images, I'm so jealous that you've been able to see these things. You know, my only experience in a night dive was volunteering on a project off Coconut Island where we were looking for coral spawning, and that was amazing. But, I am very jealous.
So that goose fish that you pointed out before, right? You know, we didn't realize it was a fish at the time. And in fact, we took a photo of it, and we knew it was a fish at that point, but we didn't really know what it was. And we started sending it around to all these experts. We sent it to a fish expert who sent it to the head of fishes at the Smithsonian, who sent it to another guy, and it bounced around in the email ether until finally it landed on the desk of this guy named Ted Teach, who is an anglerfish expert. And he was able to tell us that not only was that the first time that's ever been seen in Hawaii, that was like the third or fourth or fifth time that animal's ever actually been seen, period. And so one of the only other people that's ever seen one of those, it was in Japan, and then a couple of them were in Indonesia. One of the only other people to see one of those also happened to make plush toys. So when I got home from that dive, I went online and I was like, man, who else has seen a hairy goosefish? And that was one of the first things that popped up. So I was sure to get, I went out and got my wife one of the plush toys for, I think it was her birthday or Christmas or something.
It is amazing. And, you know, to think, I mean, I'm amazed that this hairy goosefish had a name when I think that, you know, they're still identifying, you know, some endangered species, endangered snails that, you know, only recently have been identified. So to think that there may be creatures out there that, I don't know, may go extinct and we don't even know they're there. Yeah.
And here's a concept that kind of blew my mind, kind of on the topic of endangered animals in the ocean and what does it mean to truly be rare. On my first blackwater dive, this was back in 2008, I ran into an animal called a cookie cutter shark.
This is an animal that
we know from bite wounds in the sides of like swordfish and bigger sharks and lots of game fish, whales, dolphins. They've even bitten submarines before. So we know that they're out there. In fact, 20% of the swordfish landed in 2015 that came into Honolulu had a cookie cutter shark bite in the side of them. But very, very few people at the time in 2008, I think I was one of probably 20 or maybe 30 people that had ever seen a cookie cutter shark alive in the water. So by just about any standard, people would consider that to be rare, a rare sighting, because nobody ever sees those. But just knowing how many bites get taken out of the sides of animals, that's actually a fairly common animal off in the offshore environment. It's just not something, that's not a place that most of us tend to visit very often. So, and it, the more I did the dive, the more quote unquote rare animals I encountered, like that goosefish or like the cookie cutter shark or like the pygmy shark that I saw, or the, how many other animals in that book have rarely or never been seen by another human being. That was one of the shocking moments to me, is how little we actually know about the open ocean.
That was Jeff Millison, author of the book Field Guide to Blackwater Diving in Hawaii. You can find it online at Mutual Publishing or Amazon or wherever you purchase books.